Hi, Electric Biz Babe. I'm so excited to have our first guest on the podcast. So I'm bringing you a very good one today. I have got Kelly Moser, and she's a startup strategist turned podcast consultant and guesting expert. She's based in New York City, which she mentions in the episode, and she helps brands to find their voice, break the mold, and throw the rule book out the window, which I am all about. She's helping thousands of brands and CEOs make content that doesn't just convert, but actually contributes to the collective good. Because, she says, a 7-second point and dance reel is not going to change the world, but a 60-minute conversation can. We have a spooky amount in common. We both started our business in 2018 after working two different corporate careers in operations and fashion. And we both have Virgo and Leo in our top three signs. So there's a resonance there too. The reason I wanted to get Kelly on the Electric Biz Babe podcast is because I've been in her world for a few years and I've seen her evolution journey. She started with a spirituality business and a successful low price membership, which then transformed into a podcast coaching company, specifically helping people to pitch to podcasts and get booked as a guest for more exposure. And right now, she's going through another rebrand by turning her business into a podcast agency called Hell Yes Media. If you've ever felt scared about zooming in on one particular problem that you solve, or have felt worried that people will see you as flaky for shifting to a different focus in your business, this episode should help to put your mind at rest. There is so much to be gained from picking a niche and going all in on solving one core pain point that your audience has, so that you can be the key expert and solution that they need. Kelly is a great example of this. Enjoy this episode where we're talking about niching down when you're totally unwilling to do so. Welcome to Electric Biz Babe, the podcast for women who are building their empire online and manifesting their ultimate dream life. You'll learn what it takes to be successful in business so you can experience freedom and total alignment with your soul purpose. By understanding energy and the magic within marketing, you can quantum leap and create incredible results fast. I'm Liz Roberta, author of the Hay House book, Living in Tune, and I'm going to help you become electric in your life and biz, so you can step into leadership and attract everything you desire at lightning speed. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Liz. How are you?
I'm okay. To be honest, we're recording this a few days before an eclipse, so I'm a little bit shaky. I feel like my world is being turned upside down. I'm seeing everyone on social media refocusing their business, rebranding, and both of us are going through something similar as well.
Oh, yes.
So I'm so excited to have you here today because I followed you for years and years. And I can't even remember how we first connected, but I know we know a lot of the same people and you've worked with some of my best friends. So I followed you for a long time and I have seen you pivot and evolve and grow in your business. So I kind of want to start back there. Also, we used to work in fashion. That's something else that we bond over
as
well.
That's right.
Yeah. So I used to be a merchandiser. What were you, a buyer?
Yes. I was on the buying side. So yeah, we really do have very similar paths, huh? So interesting.
Very interesting. But I love that era because it gave me such an appreciation for aesthetics and beauty and design. So much in common. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. But when you started your business, you were doing spirituality. So can we kind of start there? What inspired you to start your business? And then we'll move into the transition into podcasting, which is what you're doing now.
Yeah, absolutely. So my original, before I started a business, I worked in buying for a while. And then I ended up working for a health and wellness startup. And I was in charge of their operations and opening new locations and things like that. So I come from an operations background. Working in the startup world was super demanding. I thought corporate was demanding. Oh my gosh, when I moved to the startup world, I was working 70-hour weeks. I was exhausted all the time. I had no team. I had no help. And I was starting to really feel a lot of kind of the residual effects of a very early childhood trauma that I didn't know that I had to deal with it. You know, you just grow up and you continue moving on with your day-to-day things and you get lost in the accomplishments and the productivity and all those things. And it really all hit me at once when I was in my mid-20s, early to mid-20s. And I started to experience burnout that I had been burnt out for a long time, but I had just been running away from it. It was like, I don't want to deal with that right now. I just want to keep moving forward. I'll figure it out later. And later eventually came. And so I really discovered meditation. I totally think that meditation saved possibly my life, saved my sanity. I was in such a state of truly debilitating anxiety at this time. I was still showing up to go to work, but every minute that I wasn't working, it felt like my brain was exploding. There was no other way to explain it. I had no sense of inner peace. I was so lost. I was anxious constantly. I was afraid of everything. I also live in New York City, where just stepping outside is like a total barrage of all of your senses. And so I started to discover what it meant to be an empath, what it meant to be a highly sensitive person. I learned to kind of work through some of my traumas with therapy, and meditation was the thing that I felt like was a tool that more people needed, intuition and meditation, because they had been such profound tools for me. So that's why I started my kind of just little fledgling side hustle, helping people meditate, helping people connect with their intuition, helping them connect to a part of themselves that felt beyond anxiety, beyond depression, beyond, you know, that spiritual side of ourselves. And I loved that. And it became a really important part of my work. And then as I had this operational background, and it felt, parts of my business felt much easier to me than other people might feel at certain points on their journey, because I had this fantastic privilege of having had this operational career. And so other friends that I had in the kind of small micro business side hustle space were starting to ask me questions about business. So I pivoted to support them with their businesses, and then eventually pivoted into podcasting when I found that there was, I'm always looking for that one thing that feels so right. So the first time around, it was meditation for me. It was intuition. It was working with the spiritual side. And then when I kind of, then I sort of went back into this world of being a generalist when I was helping people with their businesses. I was helping them with everything. And that started to feel quite exhausting as well. And I realized, you know what, I'm actually probably not the person to help people with every aspect of their business. And I had started my own podcast, and that was doing well. And I had fallen in love with the podcasting space, but realized that hosting your own podcast, which I'm sure you know, Liz, is a lot of work, and it's not the right fit for everyone. So that's when I niched even kind of further and said, you know what, if you just do a podcast tour, if you just guest on podcasts, that is going to be such a powerful way for you to connect with new audiences that need to hear your message. So when we look back at our own stories, I think sometimes they feel like these really long, confusing, winding roads with these arcs that don't make sense. And so that's how I kind of feel about my story. But I think we all end up where we need to be, and sometimes the path to get there is really not what we expected. So very long-winded answer, Liz. I apologize. I haven't taken a breath in about 4 minutes.
I'm exactly the same. Whenever I go on podcasts and they ask about my journey, I'm like, oh, buckle in, guys.
I know. Because
it's so long. And I didn't even say, when you said operations, I was like, oh, my first job was actually on the grad scheme at JP Morgan in operations.
Oh my gosh.
No joke.
What are the chances?
It's so weird. But I'm like, whenever I tell my story, I just have to leave out big chunks, because I've just gone from one thing to the next. So I totally get it. And if it makes you feel better, I've had other guests who have been 7 minutes, 8 minutes on that question. So it was actually pretty succinct and to the point. So I want to kind of draw a ring around that first big transition, because I remember when it happened, and I remember you pulled back a little bit and you closed your membership. You had a really successful membership at the time, and you did this incredible offer where you gave away your membership if people left a review on the podcast, listened to the podcast. So can you talk a bit about that era and how you were feeling? Because I'm sure it was really hard and scary to leave behind a successful business and successful offers and jump and take the leap into something new that you hadn't done yet.
It really was. Excuse me. It really was. It was, so I had a membership that had about 350 people in it, And it was spirituality focused. It was monthly meditations. It was journal prompts. It was readings. It was getting people to connect with the spiritual part of themselves. I had moved my higher ticket offering. So that was a $20 to $30 a month commitment. I had moved my higher ticket offerings to be more focused on supporting entrepreneurs with their business marketing strategy operations. So I felt like I was holding two really heavy things and they felt quite different. They required different parts of my brain. They required different kinds of messaging. And they were also geared to totally different people. I do think the entrepreneurs needed a lot of that soul work. But the people that were coming to the soul work were not all entrepreneurs. So I started to see that there was a really kind of stark contrast in the two people that I was helping. And I tried to juggle it all for a long time, but eventually I just started to kind of, it's not even that I fell out of love with it. It's just that it felt like we were talking about this before we pressed record. It felt like it was starting to die. It felt like it was starting to just not feel as alive anymore. I didn't feel alive when I was working on it, which is always a sign for me that something's probably going to have to change because I'm used to feeling really alive when I'm working on something. And it felt like a real struggle to sit down and work on the membership. And it was pretty scary to say, you know what, I'm going to make this free. I still want people to have it, but I don't want to continue updating it every month. It's just not where my heart is right now. So that was what was behind the decision to make it free. And I thought, you know what, I'm launching this new podcast I'm stepping fully into serving entrepreneurs with this podcast. That's like me coming out and saying, I serve entrepreneurs and not just any person that works in corporate or whatever. So knowing that, that was kind of it was a clean break, which I really liked. I think sometimes I struggle with really walking away. And I knew that I'm just going to have to, there needs to be a line in the sand where this is before and this is after. So while it did feel really scary to say, I'm going to just release this membership, I'm going to release the income that this membership generates for me, I just felt like if I let that go, I'm going to make space for something that not only replaces that in terms of income, but also surpasses it in terms of my fulfillment, probably my income, which did end up being the case. But I manually, and I didn't have any team at the time, I didn't have anyone to support me, I manually sat there and canceled 300 people's memberships myself. And if you've ever experienced, like if you want to know what it feels like to have your nervous system shut down, just do that. It really was scary, but I'm so glad that I did it and I didn't drag it out for months and months. And it gave me a lot of confidence too, seeing that, okay, I made that big change. It worked out okay. It took a little time to get kind of back on my feet and feeling really steady, but it worked out. Now I have so much more trust in myself when I feel that sense that like something is starting to die. Now I just cut and run because I know that I'm going to be supported. I'm feeling that way for a reason. You know, you don't start to fall out of love with something that you're meant to do forever. That just wouldn't happen. So yeah, that experience was really, really challenging, but I'm so glad that I had it earlier on in my business because I would be much more scared to do it now if I hadn't done it then.
Definitely. And I think we always crave permanence. I have a tattoo on my thigh that says, "This too shall pass." Mm-hmm. And I actually got it when I was 18 and I'd been with this awful boyfriend who I now realize was a narcissist. And we've been together for 2 years. It took me about 6 months to get out of that relationship. It was so awful. So I got the tattoo then. But how true it proves to be all the time. This too shall pass. And we cling on to phases of our business, hoping that's it, hoping it will last forever. And it never is the case. I think everything happens in layers and levels. And when we've completed a certain level, there's nothing else to learn or to gain. We move up to the next one. And I put this on my feed recently. It was actually from my stories. And then I put it on my feed because I thought it had to. It was a good message. And it was all about the fact that our programs die. And I can't tell you how many times I've made a program and been like, this is it. Like, this is the one. I'm going to have this for the next 30 years. And then I launch it once or twice. I'm like, oh, can't do that again. Mm-hmm. Not because there's anything wrong with the program, but because it's completed. It's completed its life. It served the people it was meant to serve. And I can feel that portal has closed. and it's done. Like the life of the program is done. And the same is true with the levels and the layers in our business and what we're meant to focus on, because ultimately we're here to grow and learn. And if we're not growing and learning, then what's the point? And our business is just an avenue, an opportunity for us to go through that process.
Totally. And our businesses are the nature of the businesses that we run. Not every business in the world is like this, but we're so personally invested in our businesses. Our businesses are reflections of the work that we're doing, because we're constantly creating things for people that are where we were maybe a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, 5 years ago. If you're a toilet brush manufacturer, you don't have that same maybe kind of, you know, close personal emotional relationship with your end product, but we do. And so maybe that person doesn't have to evolve quite as often, but we do, because we just don't have a choice.
Absolutely. Being heart-centered entrepreneurs in our purpose, following our calling and our intuition, there needs to be a certain level of flexibility and fluidity, because it's all about that flow when we're talking about our soul and energy and intuition. It is that feminine energy. And when that's what we're following, it's going to flow and it's going to move like a river. One question I wanted to ask you, which is kind of left field, and I didn't even think I would be asking. You have a really supportive husband, as do I. Very, very fortunate. You got married in Ireland and I was following at the time. So I love those images. He's an accountant, am I right?
He's not an accountant. He works in the private equity space. Okay. So they basically invest in companies that are looking to fundraise and grow. And then if all goes well, they end up kind of selling off their share in the companies a few years later and then, you know, hopefully making some return from that investment.
Okay, got it. So he's kind of business minded. Mm-hmm. What was his take when you first said, I'm going to shut down my membership, I'm going to pivot my business? Do you remember what he said to you or what his kind of reaction was at the time?
He's such a practical person, but when it comes to my business, he's like, listen, I know that you're doing magical, crazy, weird shit over there. And I know that no practical advice that I can give you is going to even like, you just have to do whatever you feel like you've got to do. So I'm very fortunate that he's been extremely supportive, because, and I also, I wouldn't say that I'm a flighty person. Like when I'm going to make a change, it's because it's coming from the depths of my being and I feel really confident. I don't always feel confident that I know how it's going to work out, but I know that I can't keep doing that same thing anymore. And that's how I felt. I also will say that I didn't completely let go of the membership and had no income. Do you know what I mean? I was also supporting people with business mentorship and consulting at the time. So I did have... It wasn't a totally from 60 to zero. There were other offerings that were supporting me, but he was kind of like, you know what? If you're tired of it, you got to let it go, because I think he understands that passion. So he works very closely with a lot of entrepreneurs, and he knows that the passion that an entrepreneur feels is the gasoline in the tank that makes it all run. And if you run out of that passion, it's going to be really hard to sustain a business that way. So he was supportive.
I love that. We're so fortunate. Yeah, Ali's the same, but he has some fear as well. He's like, oh, are you going to? But that's just his own need for security. We have different values, and financial security is his second, whereas it doesn't even feature on my top list. So I'm just like, woo, yeah, let's go for it. Woo, freedom, like freedom and growth and impact to mine. So I'm a bit more just willing to kind of try different things. And so relate when you said about the flighty thing. So that used to be something I was really self-conscious about, because I started in finance and then I went into fashion and then I left fashion to be an entrepreneur. And I felt like everyone was looking at me like, oh, she's never going to be happy. She's really flaky and she's just going to move from thing to thing. And I knew that wasn't the case. I've always been so driven and determined. I was the kid who played by pretending to work. Like I just always wanted to work. Ever since I was tiny, I was obsessed with it. Career has always been number one. So I knew it wasn't that. I just hadn't found the right thing. So can so relate. And even though our business moves and evolves, it's all under the same business. So we're still passionate about the same thing, essentially.
Yeah.
So when you focused on podcasting, you ran that business for a while. Obviously, it's going through another evolution, which we'll get to. But what were your key takeaways of that phase of your business, helping people to share their message, speak out online, connect with each other? Because podcasting is about networking as well. And obviously in your programs, you bring people together. What were some of your key takeaways and lessons from that stage of your business journey?
I think that I had become really aware that visibility was something that people were starting to struggle with more and more. I think visibility didn't used to be as much of a problem for entrepreneurs because if you started when I started 5 years ago, you know that the algorithms were much more friendly to show your content to brand new people. That's not the case for me anymore. Almost none of my organic Instagram content, social media content gets seen by anybody that doesn't already know about me. And I was hearing constantly from the business owners that I was working with, you know, I feel like I'm not reaching anybody new and I don't know how to reach new people. I don't know where it used to not feel like such a challenge. And now it really feels like a challenge. So when I discovered something that I felt was the solution to that problem, I went all in on it because I knew that, first of all, I could see there was a huge opportunity. Very few people that I knew were leveraging guesting in a way that was designed to be a marketing strategy for them and not just like a fun thing that they did once in a while. And people who were doing it, my strategy brain was like, there's no strategy here. There's no way that this is working for them. So that's why I got so passionate about it, because I felt like it was something that was the solution to a big problem that a lot of people that I was very close with were having and did not know how to fix. It was just, they were in a cycle of, I'll just try harder. I'll just make more content. I'll just do more reels. I'll just keep doing the thing that feels maybe really, really like miserable for me to be doing. And I saw a huge opportunity in the space where I didn't see anyone really teaching it through the lens of strategy. So that to me was like, oh, there's something here. And I don't know how many people are going to be interested in it, but I'm going to just try it and see if people are interested. And they were. And so that was kind of my invitation to keep going. But yeah, I think for me, it's looking for problems that need solutions and looking for opportunities. So where can you stand out where do your gifts and skills let you shine in a way that you're not seeing a lot of other people tap into? And I was really fortunate that kind of it was the perfect storm for both of those things were true at that time.
Yeah, you really nailed a niche with the angle that you hit it at as well, because as someone who has a podcast, I, like I'm sure you do, get the emails every single day, the terrible emails from agents and assistants of people constantly asking to be on my podcast, and most of them I press delete. And having done your program, I can see how you can optimize that and get a much better result when you're pitching to podcasts. And what I loved about your approach as well is you have the strategy, but you have the warmth. It's all about connection, collaboration, and networking. So it's actually not a kind of cold-hearted, very logical, strategic approach that you have. It's very much one from the heart of warmth, connection, relationships, and being strategic as well, which I just absolutely loved.
Thank you. Yeah, I think, and that's this, everyone is looking for, you know, the perfect pitch template, the perfect strategy secret. The secret is that you're talking to another person and that person has goals and dreams and challenges. And if you can position yourself as someone who's there to help them achieve those goals and achieve those dreams and solve those problems and challenges, there's an instant connection. So it's leading from a place of what can I do for this person instead of here's what I want. And here's why I think you should give it to me, which is what most of the pitches that you and I receive probably sound and feel like is in that second camp. So yeah, the magic, which I love about the strategy, because it makes it easy for people to get on board with. And they're like, oh yeah, as long as this is all about collaboration and connection, I'm totally game to try that. And it feels so much better for people to do. So yeah, I really feel grateful that this is kind of where I've fallen into, because it feels like it blends the best of all the things that I've tried. And is this the final iteration of my life and my life's work and my business? I don't know, but but it still feels good to me right now. And someday if it doesn't, then we'll be talking about my 17th pivot and that'll be fine, you know?
I love it. And you've been to some podcasting conferences as well. What was that like?
I have only been to one. I'm going to my second one in January. I went to Podcast Movement Evolutions in Las Vegas, which let me tell you, Liz, I don't know if you've ever been to Las Vegas, but it's not my favorite place. So I was a little bit out of my empathic element was like really unhappy while I was there. But the conference itself was great. It was really interesting. So many resources for new podcasters, more established podcasters, massive podcasts. I mean, there were podcasts there that are like, I get 10 million downloads a month. How do I get 20 million downloads a month? And I was just like, oh my gosh. So it was very expansive in that way to know that there were people out there that were creating that kind of content, that kind of podcast. And what I also liked is that it's very kind of cross genre. So I'm, you know, in the business space, you're in the business space. There were people there in the comedy space, in the gardening space, in the children's bedtime story space. So I'm a big fan of, in anything that I do with my business, I try not to get in my own echo chamber too much. So I love to, of course, surround myself with people who are doing similar things to what I'm doing. But I also love to, like, I go and chat with the restaurant owner, the coffee shop owner, about what they're doing in their business. And I think, you know, so much of the wisdom is so, what's the word? It's not specific to your niche. And I've learned a lot from businesses and entrepreneurs and leaders outside of the space that I'm in. So I really loved the conference for that reason too.
Completely agree. I love reading books about founders, Richard Branson, Jeff Bezos, Phil Knight, the founder of, I was going to say Shoe Dog, because I'm looking at the book. The book is called Shoe Dog, but he's the founder of Nike. And it's not because I want to be any of these people or that they're necessarily amazing people, but what they've done is built massive businesses. So I want to see what that journey was like, and I want to see what they were thinking and how they approached it. So it's actually not a personal thing. I'm just interested in the behind the scenes of the business. And it makes you feel better because you see what they've actually gone through. Now we see Virgin as this enormous company, but you don't see the decades of work and failure and the risks that he took and all of that that went into it. And then it makes you feel a bit better about where you are in your business journey, which, by the way, also 5 years, started it in 2018. And so I also love to just research, not because they're also doing an online business in spirituality and personal development and business and that kind of thing, but because it's a business and you still need to have great customer service. You still need to do marketing. You still need to have good branding. You still need to be memorable and recognizable. These are all common things that we see in businesses. I love luxury branding, for example. That's probably the field that I'm most interested in. When you see Chanel, Prada, Gucci, and the power that those brands wield, and the fact that they will make you get your purse out and spend thousands on something that you could get for much cheaper. How have they done that? With the branding. Like, yes, it's good quality. It's great customer service. But a very big part of it is just perceived value that they have created with their branding. And the fact that they can do that just amazes me. I just find it so fascinating. And I mean, I'm in. I have a few luxury pieces. They have hooked me in. And I love just seeing, right, how have they done this? How have they persuaded me? And I have another brand as well called Holland Cooper. And I have about 6 jumpers and there's about 4 more that I want to buy. And every time my husband is like, no, you don't need another one. But they're so, so good. And they're these premium jumpers, they're British made. And again, the branding is just so, so strong. So I love observing what other companies and other brands are doing. And I'm sure you're exactly the same.
I'm exactly the same. I'm constantly, like, sometimes I'll just go out for a walk in New York and I'll look for, I just go on these little like marketing research walks where I'm like looking at people's windows and what's their signage like and what displays do they have up and what's, if they have like one of those sandwich board signs in front of their shops, what does it say? Does it make me want to go in? Does it make me want to not go in? And to your point, I mean, branding is everything. When I was working in the buying office for Bloomingdale's, which is a big retail chain here in the States, I was working in the luxury shoe office. So you would have been in heaven. But what I would see is that a lot of the kind of the manufacturing, the parent companies of a lot of these different manufacturers make a high-end brand and a mid-level brand. And the materials are the same. So you've got these two brands, one's super high-end, one's kind of mid-priced, mid-range. And they're using the same materials. They're made in the same factories. the only difference is the branding. And I always found that so interesting because I could see from the back end as the on the buying team, like what things actually cost, what it actually costs to make the shoe. And I could see that the markup was just much higher on some of the shoes than others, but it was all just the perceived. The customer doesn't know that it's made in the same factory as this other kind of mid-level brand that they wear all the time. It was, and they're not all like that. Some, you know, really high-end houses, everything's made by hand. The quality of the materials is exceptional, but a lot of the time, not like with some of the not legacy houses, some of like the newer luxury houses, everything is just made in the same place as the mid-level stuff. It's just the branding. It's just because some, you know, one person decided that this was the new thing and we all had to hop on board with it. So yes, totally fascinated by just business in general. And I think a lot of people like don't realize that when you get into business, you have to really like the business part. Like it's, I didn't really realize that. I feel like I just kind of got lucky that way. But I think people love the work that they do, but the work that you do and the business that you run, those are kind of different skill sets. And I really encourage if anyone's listening to this and they're like, I don't feel like a natural salesperson. I'm not as interested in the ins and outs of a brand or the ins and outs of the business world. Like, that's okay. You know, it's okay. And that's why people like Liz are here to support you, because Liz is obsessed with that stuff. So yeah, I think just we tend to get down on ourselves if we feel like we're not good at every aspect of everything. But I don't think we're meant to really be as passionate about every aspect of everything. And that's why you'd hire someone or outsource.
Definitely. I was that person who was selling things outside the front of my house. I was charging people at school to do nail art on their nails, which was drawing on them with a gel pen and then painting clear nail varnish over the top.
That's really smart.
Yeah. I was always hustling. I made leaflets to put around the neighborhood. Whose dog could I walk? Like, I was just always that way. And so that totally explains why working felt like agony to me. And being in an office, I felt like I was dying every day. And I was looking around going, how is everyone doing this? And how have they been here for 30 years? Like, what is wrong with me? And there was nothing wrong with me. I was just always meant to be an entrepreneur. And that's the vessel through which I can do my healing work in the world. But totally agree with what you said about some people struggling with the business side of things. When I started, it was actually doing business coaching for spiritual entrepreneurs because I was living in Glastonbury, which is a little spiritual town in England. It's all crystal shops. It's like people go there on pilgrimage. You can't get anything that you actually need there. Someone said that it's like you can buy crystals, but you can't buy a pair of socks. Like, that's the kind of vibe.
Sounds great.
It is amazing. And so I lived there when I was going through my spiritual journey, and I realized I would go to these events and they were just all over the place. And I was like, why are you not doing it this way? You know, why don't you get these people? And they would hand around a piece of paper and a pencil and be like, put your email address on here and things like that. And I was like, this could be so much easier. And then you can reach more people and have a bigger impact. So that's where I started my business. Like back in 2018, 2019, 2020, that was because I was like, I'm learning about online marketing all the time. I had a business before this, which was selling on Amazon. And so I loved it. And I obviously love spirituality as well. And I was like, I can help these people. Like mm-hmm. The fact that I love both of these things, I realized it was quite rare. And that actually a lot of people just liked the spirituality piece. So that was a bit of a tangent. But what I want to come back to is the branding piece, because you're going through a big rebrand right now and you've actually taken your name away. You've replaced it with Hell Yes Media. You've got a new website. How is that process going for you?
It's been interesting. So everything you see on the website, I did myself, which was me learning a brand new skill. I was really struggling. I'd hired a few people to kind of do it for me, but I was really struggling with what my vision was, and it was hard for me to articulate. And eventually I was like, you know what? I think I just need to get in here and play around and mess with different colors and fonts. And so that was a really interesting exercise for me, because I'm really not someone that I never would have thought that that's, you know, something that I could ever even attempt, let alone do for myself. But the process has been really, I think, cathartic, because I think I certainly was, when I looked around kind of the service provider, content creation, course creation, membership space, mostly what I saw was like the solopreneur model, where it's one person's name on the business, one person's name on the content. And I did that for a really long time, and I started to feel quite burnt out by that. And I was realizing that if I wanted to hand off like a pretty significant portion of the delivery of the content or the delivery of the work to someone else, like a team member, it would feel disingenuous to me to have it all still live under just my name. And I started to think about as well, you know, I don't think solopreneurs think about an exit strategy. I think we create businesses that we assume we're going to want to run forever ourselves. But I'm someone who might be interested in growing a business that's larger than just me, that has, you know, name recognition beyond just people knowing my name. And I might want to sell it to someone someday. And I started to kind of realize, as long as my personal brand was, as long as the business was really propped up on my personal brand, it felt like that would be much more difficult to do. So kind of thinking, you know, 10, 20 years in the future, I started to think, okay, it really would make sense to kind of pull back on my personal brand, let my personal brand live and talk about whatever she wants to talk about, and not force her to be pigeonholed to this very specific niche where I've kind of planted my roots, and also give a team the chance to build a brand that felt like as much theirs as it was mine. So that's kind of been the journey from Kelly Moser coaching consulting to Hell Yes Media, which is much more focused. And yeah, it's been really interesting. It feels in a way like I'm letting go of a lot of control, which is a good exercise for me because I am a little bit of a control freak. But at the same time, finding myself enjoying the work a lot more. So the parts that I am still very connected with, I'm really enjoying them. Whereas 6 months ago, I just felt burnt out by everything. So it's definitely relieved some pressure.
And how is the business different in terms of what it offers people? Are the offerings the same or?
Offerings are the same. We will eventually move into, I would like to produce some podcasts. I'm really right now passionate about producing fiction podcasts, which is something that I'll probably explore in the next 2 years. But for right now, we're focused on podcast tours. It's just, so that also kind of made the transition easier, is we weren't testing new offers. The offer was solid. It was the same. There was very little change in terms of the messaging around the offers. It was just the environment that the offer was living in was changing. So the website, the fonts, the colors, the content, that's really what was changing. And I think I found it, I hadn't reflected on this until now, but I think it was easier to do that way rather than change your brand, change your offerings, change everything. That to your nervous system can feel quite disruptive. So it's also allowed me to kind of take it slow and roll things out at a very comfortable pace.
And are you doing the launch gradually behind the scenes, or are you going to do a big announcement?
I'm really not doing a big announcement. I think it's just, you know, I think for a few different reasons. I think there's so much going on in the world that rebranding my business doesn't feel like the thing that people care about. They're like, great, I don't really care. And that's fine. I care. So that's to me, and I get to show up and operate in a new way under a new branding in a new space. So that's just my personal preference. Like if you're going through a rebrand, you're listening to this and you want to make a big splash about it, do it. Like if that feels great to you, go for it. But I feel like I've made so many splashes over the past few years that like I'm kind of tired of splashing, and that's fine. Like I just want to make changes behind the scenes and be done. So I'm not making a huge splash about this one.
And do you have any tips? I'm sure you have about 100 million tips. But for someone listening to this, you've had huge success with your podcast, which we haven't really talked about yet. But your own podcast itself is very, very successful. Where is it kind of ranking now? Because I know it's high.
It's ranked in the top 1%. But I will say, like, you know, it's so funny. The difference between being ranked in the top 1% and being ranked in the top 0.05%, like that's a massive podcast. 0.05, 0.01% is a massive podcast. So I'm very grateful for the love and support on the podcast. And I do just want to, like, you know, I don't want anyone to have any illusions that we have a million downloads a month. We certainly don't. But yes, we are ranked in the top 1%.
That's amazing. So if someone is thinking about starting their own podcast, what would be your key words of wisdom for them?
Know exactly what you want your podcast to do for you. So understand what the purpose of the podcast is. And keep in mind that there are so many different kinds of podcasts. There are so many different ways to produce a podcast. I think people hear, you know, oh, podcast, that means one episode a week. Every other episode is an interview, and I just do that forever. And that really doesn't, it's not the only formula that works. That's what I do, but I will say my podcast is not a lead generation tool. So if you are looking to, you know, really make your podcast a lead generation tool, make it really specific, make it really congruent to the offers that you have. If you're looking to build more of just have it be a kind of free offering, a place where you offer a lot of value, you're not hellbent, you don't need it to be a lead generator for your business, then you have a little bit more flexibility in terms of, you know, what kind of content you talk about. But I think people really overlook the why, and they just start kind of doing whatever. And then 6 months or 12 months down the road, they're like, wait a second, I thought this was going to, you know, fill my programs, and I don't really feel like it is. Or wait a second, I thought this was really going to help build my thought leadership, and it's not, because I have guests on every week and I never get to be the thought leader. So I think really thinking about, okay, what is your end goal? And then thinking about, what does that mean for what needs to be on the show and what kind of content you need to share and how often you're talking versus having somebody else talk? Those things I think are really important before you start, because once you start, you're just going to go, and you might find yourself creating results that you didn't actually want or weren't actually really important to you.
So being super intentional from the beginning, I love that. And what is your opinion? People who put their podcast on YouTube as well, what is your opinion about that?
I think, so this is really not a personal opinion. This is just what I'm hearing from my friends and contacts in the podcasting space, that video really is going to be the future of podcasts. So being on YouTube is, I think, a great move. If you've been doing it all along, you're ahead of the curve. If you haven't been doing it all along, that's okay. But, you know, it might be time to start thinking about doing that. I have never had my podcast on YouTube, but I know it's something that if I want to continue growing my podcast, that being on YouTube is going to be really helpful. There's something like some crazy stat that Gen Z podcast listeners, like, almost exclusively watch podcasts. They do not listen to podcasts. They watch, which to me feels so foreign. I would never watch a podcast on YouTube. But I think just being aware of how other demographics, how other kinds of people are consuming content, like, that's something that I never would have even considered. But if you, for example, want to be reaching a younger demographic on your podcast, you might really want to consider being on YouTube.
I'm so glad I asked you that question, because I didn't know that. That's insane. I listen to podcasts when I'm driving and when I'm walking.
Me too. Gen Z, I think it's over 75% of where Gen Zers, they didn't even know that you could listen to a podcast on Spotify. It's so interesting. And someone on my team is a Gen Z person, and I'm always like, What do you mean you watch podcasts? What are you doing? She's like, we don't watch TV. We watch podcasts. Like, that is crazy, but it's, I guess, the future, because those, you know, Gen Zers might seem kind of young to you right now, but in 10 years, they're going to be right in your same demographic. It's really interesting to think about how different generations consume content.
Now we're talking about it. The only people I know who are kind of younger than me are my nieces and nephews. The oldest one is 16, and they're all obsessed with TikTok and YouTube. They live on those two platforms. Constantly. Like, my niece is 8, and I swear she's already addicted to TikTok. They're obsessed with video platforms in a way that we never were. We grew up without any social media. Then we got Facebook, well, MySpace, then Facebook and Instagram. And these other things have been a lot more recent, so I don't feel like they've hooked us in as much. But goodness me, I'm so glad I asked you that question, because I didn't know that. And I've got a YouTube account. I'm like, I need to start putting these on there.
Yeah, especially if you have like a backlog, just put them all up there, you know, even if they get discovered, great. If not, then it's just a great video library for you somewhere. But yeah, it's very, very interesting.
Yeah, definitely. So I could pick your brain forever, but I want to be conscious of your time and your energy. So where do you see Hell Yes Media going? What is your vision for the future?
My vision is to teach 10,000 entrepreneurs how to launch a podcast tour. So that's my goal for the Hell Yes Guest program. I see Hell Yes Media filling, I don't think I've actually told anyone this, so I'm really excited that you're the first person who's asked me and I get to share it with. I think that there is, so I'm a big podcast listener. I'm a big audiobook listener as well. And I am out walking my dog. I'm running around doing errands. I've always got something in. And I think there's a huge white space for podcasts that are of the fiction, in the fiction genre, that are a blend of, like, think of Colleen Hoover, like her kind of books, that's suspense, it's a little bit of romance, it's a little bit of sometimes fantasy. I think there's a huge white space for podcasts that are written by women and non-binary folks and people of color. I think there's a huge white space for that. So I would love for Hell Yes Media to be like the destination for those kinds of podcasts that are entertainment podcasts, which is really kind of a departure from what we're doing now. But I also think it's a great opportunity for authors who have a fiction story that they've been trying to get published for so long. Let's produce an audio drama instead. And so you can get it to people faster. And when you have 100,000 people listening to your podcast, that's going to be, you know, easier for you to potentially get a book deal. So I'm excited about kind of taking on that big project that feels really creative. So that'll be something to look forward to in the next few years.
I was not expecting that answer at all.
I know. I know, Liz, I'm telling you, like, I couldn't make this up. It just comes out, just one day you wake up and you're like, oh, I'm going to do that.
I feel a new niche coming, a new rebrand coming. Oh my goodness. I love it. I'm just obsessed. I could honestly pick your brain forever and go down so many different avenues. When you started talking about books and book deals, I was like, no, Liz, let's not go down here.
Oh my gosh, I know. Oh my gosh, I know.
That's like literally one of my favorite topics. But we'll wrap it up here. Where can people find you? How can you help them? This has been insane. If people want to carry on this journey with you, where should they go?
Oh, Liz, thank you so much for having me. I had such a good time talking to you, and I just could continue talking to you forever as well. If you're listening to this and a podcast tour is something that you're curious about, I would love to connect with you. I've got a really, really valuable free masterclass that is for entrepreneurs who want to book 10 to 15 podcasts a quarter and actually have them do something for your business. So actually generate some kind of ROI for your business. Maybe we can include that in the show notes, or you can send me a message on Instagram and I'll happily send that your way. I'm not quite as active on Instagram these days because I'm doing a little bit of a social media, just really pull back. But my podcast is a place where I continue to offer tons of free content for entrepreneurs as well, who are kind of the blend of the strategic and the spiritual. So would love to see you there. The podcast is called Aligned Success, and we're on all platforms wherever you would listen to a podcast.
Thank you so much, Kelly. This has been so much fun.
Thank you, Liz.
If you're looking for your next step towards your next level, head to the link under this episode, where you can download a free course on how to build your soul-aligned empire. If you love mastering energetics and manifestation, alongside the tangible, practical business pieces, this is for you. If you're enjoying this podcast, reviews really help, and hit subscribe so you see when new episodes come out each week. I'll see you next time on the Electric Biz Babe podcast.